Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into our program today. You may know that Family Talk is a listener-supported program, and we remain on the air by your generosity, literally. If you can help us financially, we would certainly appreciate it. God's blessings to you all.
Today on Family Talk.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Roger Marsh, speaking for Family Talk and our host, psychologist and best-selling author Dr. James Dobson. Now, you may have heard that Dr. Dobson serves on an evangelical group that advises President Donald Trump on matters of faith. Well, that has taken him to the White House many, many times in recent months to discuss various issues. In all, Dr. Dobson has beaten a path between Colorado and Washington, D.C. regularly since President Trump's election. And we want to ask him about that right now. Well, Dr. Dobson, tell us about the trip to Israel that you recently just returned from. Why did you go there, and what was your purpose?
Well, we were invited there to that historic country, which we call the Holy Land, with a fairly large entourage of faith advisory group members. You just mentioned that, Roger. And we went there at the invitation of an organization called Friends of Zion. The Israeli government also played a role in it. And it was one of the most inspirational trips I've ever taken. Jerusalem is a beautiful city. It's safe, more than it's ever been, they tell me. And the residents there are warm and friendly, and they seem to love America. We were treated with graciousness. They also love our president, Donald Trump, because of what he's doing to support this land. And the food was very good. We stayed at the King David Hotel, which is an historic hotel there in the heart of Jerusalem. And that was, by the way, paid for by the Friends of Zion. And we were all so inspired by the visit. The things that inspired us, I have not yet mentioned, but I can tell you it was a wonderful trip.
Well, it sounds very inspiring. Dr. Dobson, who were some of the other Christian leaders and pastors who were with you on this trip?
Many of our listeners will know of these pastors or have heard them Sunday after Sunday. They're all great people. They do a wonderful job for the Lord. Let me just give you some of the names. I hope I don't miss them. Jensen Franklin was one of them. Harry and Vivian Jackson. Johnny Moore. Jack Graham, you know, he's senior pastor of Prestonwood Baptist Church in right near Dallas. Tom Mullins, senior pastor, Christ Fellowship, Palm Beach, Florida. Greg and Catherine Laurie, Harvest Fellowship. Ralph and Joanne Reed. Robert Jeffress, senior pastor, First Baptist Church in Dallas. Eric and Suzanne Metaxas. He's an author, has been on this program many times. And Sammy and Eva Rodriguez.
Wow, what a powerful group. Dr. Dobson, what were some of the historic sites that you and the team got to see?
We, first of all, saw many of the historic places that were not available. You could not see them. They were not known when Shirley and I were there 25 years ago. That was 1993, and we had 16 days in Israel then. It is so different today. You just cannot believe. The country is flourishing. They have no debt. Everywhere you look, you see cranes where they're building things and roads and houses. It's just very inspirational to see. We were taken on a ride that took most of the day on 8 helicopters that were provided for us. We flew over northern Israel. We flew over Jerusalem. We flew over Armageddon, the battlefield where the last conflict will occur. We flew right over the mountain of Transfiguration. If you think that wasn't inspirational to know that Jesus came up right from that spot. We went to a lot of new excavations that were not even known when we were there before. One of them is that they have excavated an area below the Wailing Wall. And Jesus walked, we're told, down there where that excavation has occurred. It was very exciting. And our helicopters landed very near a new excavation of a first century synagogue where Mary Magdalene was a visitor. If you can believe that, they know that from what they've excavated. And the path that goes in front of that synagogue walks straight down to the Galilee. So Jesus almost certainly would have walked past that synagogue and probably was there in the inside. It is only about 3 feet off the ground because the rest of it's been destroyed. But you talk about being deeply moving. There is also a chapel right near that excavation site that has been built by the Catholics. And we were able to go into that chapel, and we made a circle, and we prayed for our country and prayed for other prayer requests that were spoken as we stood there. It was a wonderful moment. And again, we're looking right straight out at the Galilee. By the way, my voice is very craggy today, and the reason is because I'm still in jet lag. And I do hope to get over that one of these days. But that was a long, long journey. But let me tell you this. This is really exciting. People are not permitted without a special permit to go into the Golan Heights, which is above the Sea of Galilee. But our helicopters were, and we went in there and landed right where the major battle in the Yom Kippur War of 1973 was fought. And one of the commanding generals was there with us. So we were on a little hillside off to the side, and we could look down and see where the battle was fought. Oh, my. And it is an unbelievable story. Maybe you've heard it. I hadn't. Syria had 600 tanks, and Israel had 60. And they did battle down there. And Israel won that battle. One of the commanders told me personally that there was a point at which he only had three tanks left over in one side of the battle. And the Syrians had 60. And they clashed. And Israel knocked out 16 of them. And the rest turned and fled. Amazing. I mean, it was a miracle. That's what the commander himself said. There was no other way to explain it. It was a miracle. And it was one that gave us goosebumps as we sat there and watched and imagined what took place right there on that spot.
I'll bet. I'm feeling the chill, too, myself, just hearing you describe it, Dr. Dobson. What a breathtaking sight it must have been for you to be in that moment with someone who'd actually lived it. Dr. Dobson, tell me why Israel is so meaningful to you and to the others who were on this trip with you.
Well, Roger, I was raised to revere Israel. It's part of my heritage. After all, the roots of Christianity are found in the Old Testament. And without those Old Testament stories, we wouldn't even know about Abraham and Joseph and David and Hezekiah and Israel and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and the other heroes of our faith. And their story is rooted right there in that land. But then, of course, Jesus walked there. Why would that not be precious to us? But let me tell you, it gets even more personal than that. And you want to go straight to my heart. Let me tell you about this memory. The year was May the 15th, 1948, and I was 12 years old. And I got up to go to school, got myself ready, and had breakfast. And I was on my way out the door, and my mother called me. My dad was an evangelist, so he was gone. And she called me and said, "Come into the bedroom with me." And I went into the bedroom. I had no idea what she was about to say. And she sat on the bed, and she said, "Sit on that chair right there." And she said, "I want to tell you something. An event that we have been waiting for generations in our family and throughout the Christian church happened today because the United Nations created the State of Israel. Mm-hmm. And this is a biblical prophecy that has come to pass right here within our hearing and with our knowledge. And she was very emotional as she said it. And, you know, I was 12 years old, and I went to school thinking about that and what that meant. But that's actually what happened. The United mm-hmm. Nations created the country, the State of Israel, that had been prophesied in the Old Testament and the New. And it's happened in our lifetime. And the other things that have been prophesied for that place and that time are going to happen, too. Mm.
Boy, Dr. Dobson, I can still hear how fresh that memory is for you in your voice, that having that moment with your mother and such a deep spiritual significance, and then being able to just return from the Holy Land and see where the United States is getting ready to move our embassy to Jerusalem on the 70th anniversary of that historic announcement. What a special moment for you personally, but also for us as the church. Dr. Dobson, you mentioned a moment ago that you were invited to Israel by the government. Which government officials did you meet with when you were there?
Well, Roger, there were many of them, and it started early every day and was sprinkled throughout each of 7 days that we were there. As I mentioned earlier, we were given an audience with Prime Minister Netanyahu, mm-hmm. who, as I said, was very friendly and receptive. At one point, he said, "We, the Jewish people, would not be in this place without you." And he wasn't referring just to us, but to those who have prayed for Israel and those who had supported it through the years, mostly from America. We also met with the head of security and the chief advisor to Netanyahu, and they were very candid with us. We met with the mayor of Jerusalem and the American ambassador, who impressed us all. That's one of the most articulate men I've met. And on another night, there were 13 ambassadors in one room that we met with, and there were probably 25 or 30 rabbis who were there at that time. We met with the commissioner of tourism, and they also took us to a war memorial, naming the people who lost their lives defending Israel. And we walked along looking at every one of them. I think there were 26,000, something like that, who had lost their lives in one of those other wars, either the Yom Kippur War of 1973 or the Six-Day War and the other conflicts that they've had there. They just are tough. They're tough warriors, and they defended that nation. I must tell you this. When Shirley and I were in Israel in 1993, I was chosen among the 16 people who came there on that visit to meet with the chief rabbi, Rabbi Lau, who is a very influential man in Israel. Now, of course, he's 25 years older, aren't we all? But yeah. He met with us. We had dinner together, and then he stood and he told his story. And I tell you, it was gripping. Rabbi Lau was 8 years old when he was taken to Buchenwald, one of the concentration camps where they killed hundreds of thousands of Jews. And he had no chance of surviving that, being a little boy. His mom, dad, and sister were all murdered. So he was alone in that place, except for a teenage boy who was taken with the rabbi, wasn't called that then. I don't remember his first name. But at any rate, he took him under his wing, and he was determined to help him survive. And he was in a place where he could steal food. So he was stealing food for his young friend, the 8-year-old boy. And he kept him alive. He took care of his needs. He just loved him. There was nothing inappropriate about that. There was just a desire to help one of his younger colleagues survive. And they both did. The teenage boy was a Russian. And, you know, there wasn't a lot in common between the Jews and Russia. And yet somehow God put it in his heart to help take care of this 8-year-old boy, and then 9 and 10. I don't know how long he was there, but they both survived, and they were rescued when the Russian army came in. And they were in terrible shape, as you can imagine. But they went their separate ways. And Rabbi Lau lost track of his friend, and he spent years looking for him. He wanted to thank him. He wanted to hug him. Mm-hmm. He wanted to show appreciation to him for what he had done. He couldn't find him. And finally, he tracked him down in Russia. And he made a trip there to see him. And he was on his way over to thank him and to see him. And the man died. And by the time he got there, he was gone, and he missed by a short amount of time the opportunity to tell him how much he appreciated his love for him and what he had done during that horrible concentration experience. But he got an opportunity to meet his grown children and their children, his grandchildren, and they would not have known what their grandfather did if Rabbi Lau had not gone and found them and told them of the heroic things that took place. We were all stunned by the story. Mm-hmm. There were so many things like that that took place, and I wish I could remember them all. I was taking notes as fast as I could, but I still didn't get it all done.
Well, our time is almost through, and Dr. Dobson, before we conclude today's broadcast, I know there's a story that has been covered worldwide involving someone who you had a great amount of admiration and respect for.
Yes, and I think that almost everybody in the country has heard it and knows about the passing of Dr. Billy Graham at 99 years of age. And I did have great love for him, and it's almost prophetic, or it certainly has great symbolism, that we as evangelical leaders were sitting there in front of the Prime Minister of Israel, having just heard, I think it was the day before, that Billy Graham had passed away. And we were all deeply moved by that, because nearly all of us knew him or knew what he had accomplished. And it so happens that Billy Graham's granddaughter was with us in our group. Mm. Her name is Jane Sissy Graham Lynch. And when she had a chance to talk to the Prime Minister, she gave the most eloquent speech. It was only about 3 minutes long, talking about her grandfather and how she loved him and what he had meant to her, and what he had meant to nations, the millions and millions of people. I wish I had it recorded, but it passed into history. But anyway, she was there on that occasion, and we were talking about Billy Graham, and all of us were deeply moved by it. Mm. It so happens, Roger, that I came home from this long trip, as I've said, jet-lagged out of my mind.
Sure.
And I hadn't any more than gotten home than Fox News called me and asked if I would be willing to do a short interview on Saturday morning before the funeral. We have a recording of it, and I think probably we ought to end the program with that, don't you think?
Yeah, let's do that. We have the interview queued up right now. Mark, let's go ahead and hear that.
Religion without a personal encounter with Jesus Christ will not save the soul, and it will not bring the peace that your soul longs for.
The motorcade carrying Reverend Billy Graham's body has arrived in Charlotte. His body will now lie in repose for several days at his childhood home before coming here to D.C. for 2 days of public viewing in the Capitol. Joining us now to discuss Graham's life and legacy, his good friend and colleague, Dr. James Dobson. Nice to see you, sir. You knew the man well. Was the man that we saw on the television any different than your friend?
Certainly not that I saw, Leland. He was who he was, and he was loved by people around the world. I certainly loved him. I was a generation behind him, but I felt like he was a friend, and I think everybody who knew him felt like he was a friend.
So many people considered him friends, including presidents, and there has been this amazing intersection, if by nobody else, even than Graham's own son, between religion and politics. This is what Reverend Graham had to say about that. Back in 1981, "I don't want to see religious bigotry in any form. It would disturb me if there was a wedding between the religious fundamentalists and the political right. The hard right has no interest in religion except to manipulate it." Then in 2011, in sort of a goodbye interview, he said, "I also would have steered clear in politics. I'm grateful for the opportunities God gave me to minister to people in high places. People in power have spiritual and personal needs like everyone else and often have no one to talk to. But looking back, I know I sometimes crossed the line and I wouldn't do that now." Is there a lesson from Reverend Graham to today's political pastors?
Well, he was not a political man in any sense of the word. And he got criticized for that. In fact, there were times when I wished that he had been more pro-life or pro-marriage, the other things that many Christians believe. But he knew what his message was, and he was not going to be deterred from it. And he was always, and if you ever heard him interview, he talked about Jesus Christ, and he went straight to the cross. That's who he was, and that was not going to get changed by politics.
Was that, you don't want to say apolitical, but a universal message that he had, did that make him in some ways more powerful as a preacher, as trying to bring people to God?
Leland, I don't know how you could get more powerful. There's never been a man quite like him around the world. I'm sure that he's preached to more people than certainly than Jesus or many of the other early ministers. So he had a powerful message. There was something about him. There was an ordination there. There was an anointing on him from early on. I remember seeing him on television way early in the 1950s. And already then, everybody saw it. They felt it. They came out to hear him. He was quite a man.
What a 99 years of life. He will be buried so close to where he grew up. I was struck by an interview that his son gave in which he said that he asked his father what he wanted on his tombstone, and he will be remembered as he lived, simply, Billy Graham, preacher. Give me your sense of what he was like as a friend. Remember him for something that we didn't see.
What you asked in the beginning is really true, that he was who you think he was, what you saw in his message. The interesting thing is that he was not a powerful personality sometimes until he stepped into the pulpit. And then the moment he got that Bible in his hands and began speaking, the power came on him. That's why I say he was ordained. There was a God blessing on that man, yeah. And he's been like nobody I've ever seen or heard.
Well, and remembered in a way that almost no one has been remembered like in modern times. Universally good, universally loved, with universal sincerity. Dr. Dobson, I know you got back from Israel. We want to talk to you about that trip sometime in the not-so-distant future with the U.S. Embassy moving and other times, but we appreciate you taking the time now to remember Reverend Graham. We'll continue our coverage throughout the weekend and into next week with that.
I appreciate you having me on. I'm jet-lagged up to here, but that's the way
well,
it is.
Well, we couldn't tell, sir, and we appreciate you being here. Get some rest.
Thank you.
And Dr. Jet lag or not, it was a very, very powerful remembrance that you just shared on the Fox News channel regarding Dr. Billy Graham. And we're grateful that you had that opportunity to share it and that we could share it with our listeners today here on Family Talk. Doctor, earlier in the broadcast, we talked so much about your trip to Israel. Do you have any plans to return to the Holy Land?
Well, as a matter of fact, Roger, I probably do. Shirley and I have been invited to come back to Israel in March or April, when the American embassy is moved to Jerusalem, and I would like to be there for the opening of that embassy.
Well, we hope you have enjoyed this special edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. We encourage you to visit our website at drjamesdobson.org. And also please know that this program is made possible by the prayers and faithful financial support of listeners like you. We've just concluded the month of February. And February is always a month of struggle when it comes to finances for ministries all across the country. And with Family Talk, it was no exception this past February. So as you are benefiting from these programs and you are sensing God's leading to partner with us financially, we encourage you to drop us a line. Go to drjamesdobson.org and you can give a gift securely online. That's drjamesdobson.org. Or you can call us toll free with your tax deductible donation at 877-732-6822. That's 877-732-6825. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks so much for listening today. Be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.